Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue our look at a book written by a BYU professor, Charles R. Harrell. This is My Doctrine, The Development of Mormon Theology. The reason that we've decided to go through this book, and it's not going to be an exhaustive study by any stretch of the imagination, but we find that Professor Harrell doesn't seem to agree with a lot of the interpretations that have come down from Mormon general authorities. That's a big issue in Mormonism because, really, when a general authority in the Mormon Church speaks, that's pretty much the final word on it, isn't it, Eric?
The thinking has been done.
That's exactly the phrase that has been used. Well, we've been looking at a statement that Russell M. Nelson gave, and this was in the Deseret News, the September 21st, 2017 edition. It was an article titled, President Russell M. Nelson Invites Young Adults to Study the Bible with Him. At the time, he made the statement as president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, and he was encouraging these young people that were listening to him to study the Bible, and naturally we'd get excited about that. Unfortunately, Russell M. Nelson isn't really studying the Bible for all its grandeur. He's studying the Bible to look for proof text that he thinks supports the coming forth of the Book of Mormon. In particular, he mentions Isaiah 29 and Ezekiel 37. And as we brought out in yesterday's show, Russell M. Nelson is notorious for referring to these two verses as proof texts for the coming forth of the Book of Mormon. Yesterday, we went through statements that he made in the October 2007 conference address that he gave titled Scriptural Witnesses, where he again uses the Isaiah passage in chapter 29. He starts with verse 4. And also Ezekiel 37. But when it comes to this understanding, Eric, Russell M. Nelson is not alone. Even though I mentioned that he does refer to these verses a lot, he's not alone in this interpretation of these passages. What other sources can a person look to find how we feel the Mormons have misinterpreted what Isaiah was trying to say?
Well, you can certainly go to the general authorities and you can go to church manuals. I think it's important before we look at those, Bill, we need to read the first four verses of Isaiah 29 to see what they are interpreting. This is what it says. Woe to Ariel, the city where David dwelt. Add ye year to year. Let them kill sacrifices. Yet I will distress Ariel, and there shall be heaviness and sorrow, and it shall be unto me as Ariel, and I will camp against thee round about, and will lay siege against thee with a mount, and I will raise forts against thee.
Okay, let's stop there, because as we've been explaining, if you're going to understand what a passage is saying, you have to ask yourself some questions. First of all, a word is introduced in verse 1. Now, Russell M. Nelson doesn't go back to verse 1. He starts with verse 4. And I think by starting at verse 4 in his conference message that he gave in 2007, he does his listeners a disservice because he doesn't give the historical context of what is going on. Woe to Ariel, to Ariel. We understand from Bible scholars that Ariel is referring to Jerusalem.
Well, not just that. It says it right there in verse 1, the city where David dwelt. So if you had any doubts, you don't have to be a Bible scholar to figure out that Ariel equals Jerusalem.
And of course, Ariel literally means altar hearth. That's what scholars have said that that means. So where did they kill sacrifices? As it says in verse 1, let them kill sacrifices. Obviously, again, that's a reference to Jerusalem.
The temple.
In verse 2, it says, I will distress Ariel. There shall be heaviness and sorrow. It shall come to me as Ariel. I will camp against thee round about, will lay siege against thee with a mount, and I will raise forts against you. Okay, this sounds like a battle situation. It sounds like a description of a warlike situation. So if that is the case, why all of a sudden in verse 4, does it switch from describing a battle situation to talking about books.
And this is what verse 4 says, the whole verse, "And thou shalt be brought down, and shalt speak out of the ground, and thy speech shall be low out of the dust, and thy voice shall be as of one that hath a familiar spirit out of the ground, and thy speech that whisper out of the dust." Now, a Latter-day Saint Bill is going to say, look, the Book of Mormon plates were buried in the ground by Moroni, and they were taken out of the ground, and they spoke to Joseph Smith because he translated the Book of Mormon. Isaiah here is making a reference to the Book of Mormon.
That's what they would say, but does that make sense in light of verses 1 through 3 when it says, "And you shall be brought down"? Who's you? The you is obviously Ariel, to whom verse 1 is addressing the city where David dwelt. Ariel shall be brought down, and Ariel shall speak out of the ground. Ariel's speech shall be low out of the dust. You see what I'm saying? All of a sudden, the Mormons want to switch the context here, ignore verses 1 through 3, which explains clearly to us to whom this is addressed, who Isaiah is talking to or about, and they completely change that now to say, oh, well, that's talking about a book. The context does not allow for that at all. You have to really read into it. Isn't there a lot of eisegesis in this interpretation that most Mormons hold to today?
Well, and you mentioned earlier that there are other people who have said this, not just Nelson, it's not just his opinion. Let me read to you out of Lesson 122, talking about Isaiah 29. This comes from the Old Testament Seminary Teacher Manual from 2014. This is what they are teaching high school students, and this is the introduction to the lesson on Isaiah 29. It says this: Isaiah prophesied of the great apostasy and the restoration of the gospel, including the coming forth of the Book of Mormon. He prophesied that the Book of Mormon would correct false doctrine and bring joy to those who read and live by its teachings.
I just can't get over this leap in logic. Isaiah prophesied of the great apostasy and the restoration of the gospel, including the coming forth of the Book of Mormon. Where in the world you come up with that kind of a conclusion based on the first four verses that we have read out of Isaiah chapter 29. Again, you have to approach the passage with an already settled in your mind presupposition. You would never come up with this just by reading those passages alone. And that's why when Russell M. Nelson in this article in the Deseret News is inviting people to read the Bible, first of all, I would say, yeah, let's go for it. But then he says, so we can find out what it says about the Book of Mormon?
That manual goes on and says this: why are there so many different Christian churches if they all believe in the Bible? Christian denominations interpret the Bible and Christ's doctrine differently. I find that to be interesting because it says that we are doing it differently than the way they do it. Well, obviously, somebody's got to be wrong. You can't have both of us being correct.
And don't you just enjoy how in the parentheses it says Christian denominations, how it's separating the Mormons from the rest of us?
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting telltale sign right there that they are definitely looking at themselves as being different.
Then this question is asked in the manual for teachers. How can you know the Lord's true doctrine when there are so many ways to interpret the Bible? Bill, they're correct. There are many ways to interpret the Bible, but there's only one right way, and there are many false ways, potential ways that you can make the Bible say what it never was intended to say.
And we would agree that some passages are vague, and we don't have a real clear-cut understanding of some passages. But I remember when I was taking a hermeneutics class with Dr. Ronald Youngblood years and years ago back in San Diego, and he used to always talk about plausible interpretations. And he says, sometimes you can't be specific on some of these things, but you have to come to a conclusion whether or not your interpretation is plausible. And I would say that the interpretation that Russell M. Nelson gives us and the interpretation that the manuals in the Mormon Church are promoting regarding the passage in Isaiah 29 are just not plausible. And you need to take that into account. Yes, there could be some basic differences of opinion regarding what some of the words might mean, but is the interpretation given by the LDS Church a plausible interpretation? We would say no, it's not.
And this manual goes on and says, invite students to look for truth as they study Isaiah 29 that can help them know the Lord's true doctrine. Obviously, the true doctrine is the one that the Mormon Church is going to come up with. So this is the next paragraph. Summarize Isaiah 29, 1 through 8, by explaining that Isaiah prophesied of the destruction of Jerusalem, which occurred because of the wickedness of the people who live there. I don't have a problem with that sentence. But right. Then it goes on and says this. He also referred to the Nephite nation, which would also be destroyed because of wickedness. Point out the phrase, quote, thy voice shall be as of one that hath a familiar spirit out of the ground, and thy speech shall whisper out of the dust, end quote.
Well, when it says thy voice, how in the world would you draw the conclusion that that's talking about Nephites?
Yeah.
When the context is clearly speaking of the voice that's being referred to would be the city of Jerusalem. And obviously the people in it, since a city itself can't speak audibly, it's referring to somehow the people in it.
Then look at the leap in logic that happens here. It goes on and says, explain that this prophecy from Isaiah 29 refers to the coming forth of the Book of Mormon, which was translated from plates hidden in the ground by Moroni. The voice of the Nephite people speaks to us today from the pages of that book. Explain that Isaiah also spoke of the conditions of the latter days. See verses 5 through 10. I don't think, Bill, that Isaiah had any clue that he was saying what the Mormon Church is saying that he said.
Well, and that would go back to what I said earlier when it comes to eisegesis, or reading into the passage something that the author never intended. And I think you're right. I don't think Isaiah had that in mind at all when he was putting these words on paper.
To make the point, let me refer to one other manual. This is called the Old Testament Seminary Student Study Guide from 2002, and is referring to Isaiah 29. Look at what it says. Sometimes people who are familiar with the Bible and are not members of the church will ask us something like, if the Book of Mormon is such an important part of the work of God, why is it not mentioned in the Bible? There are several answers to that question, and one of them is, it is. Isaiah 29 is one place in the Bible where the Book of Mormon is referred to, even though it is not mentioned by name. As you read this chapter, look for prophecies of the coming forth of the Book of Mormon and the impact this book will have on the world. Well, Bill, I'm going to say you're going to look for prophecies that you would only understand is if the Mormon Church has given you instructions as to what Isaiah 29 is all about. I don't know of anybody who would come up with the idea that this is referring to Joseph Smith or the Book of Mormon, that it was buried in a ground and it came up and it was going to give us another testament of Jesus Christ.
And in light of what you just said, let me say that Charles R. Harrell certainly doesn't come up with that kind of a conclusion, and that's what we want to talk about in tomorrow's show. And I apologize for leading up to this point by taking so long, but we felt it was important to give the groundwork for what Charles Harrell is going to say regarding these passages in Isaiah 29. We hope that you'll be listening to tomorrow's program.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.